The sparrow called out from the roof, her voice muffled by the wind. Matthias's paws quivered with the strain of hauling up his own body weight. He strove gallantly upwards, reaching the gutter. It took all the young mouse's courage to let go of the rope and grab for the thin curving edge. Nerving himself, he did it in one clean move, clamping his paws heavily into the weather-worn sandstone groove. Under the unexpected weight, it crumbled and broke. Matthias plunged downward, his feet where his head had been a second before. A chunk of stone hurtled past him on its flight to earth. The rope went taut with a jolt that drove the breath from him. Matthias dangled on the rope's end for a moment. Then he started to slip slowly down. Above him on the roof, Dunwing had lost her footing. The sparrow's claws screeched and grated on the roofing slates as the weighted rope pulled her downwards on the steep slope. Dunwing leaned back, trying to dig her claws in somewhere to check the inexorable slide. The broken gutter edge loomed up, surprisingly, bringing with it a desperate chance. With lightning speed, Dunwing tugged hard on the rope, gaining a little slack. Giving a skillful flick, she jammed the rope in the niche of the broken stone edge. It slipped for a moment, then held. Flying out, Dunwing took a few extra turns upon the rope, locking it off firmly on the projecting edge. Letting go of her end, the sparrow flew down underneath Matthias. She started pushing him upwards. Matthias climbed as he had never done before. Aided by Dunwing, he made it. Two things happened at once. He grabbed for the gutter just as a sharp, newly broken stone soared through the rope. Snap! Grab! As the rope parted, Matthias clung to the gutter with Dunwing pushing as she flew upwards. He scrambled over the edge of the gutter and rolled inwards to safety. Dunwing joined him. They both lay completely exhausted as the wind howled around them, stunned by the danger they had come through. The mother sparrow was first to recover. She drove her mouse friend relentlessly to his feet.
Matthias, come hurry. We waste time.
The climb of the sloping roof was extremely treacherous. Slightly unhinged by the perilous events, Matthias giggled to his friend.
It's all in the average day's work of a warrior. No use of a warrior worrying.
Taking into account loose slates, buffeting wind and the occasional slide backwards, Matthias reckoned he had done pretty well as he gained the roof ridge. He straddled it with both feet, gazing straight ahead at the north point of the weather vane. Dunwing fluttered above him. She saw the look of achievement upon his face and ruffled his ears with her claws.
Matthias Mouse, me got to go now. No can help any more. Take care. Good worm hunt.
Dunwing flew off to her nest back at the court of King Bullsparrow. Matthias pressed forwards along the roof ridge. He would never forget Dunwing and her egg chick Warbeak. Friends in need are friends indeed. Bracing himself against the weather vane, Matthias shielded his eyes and peered down into the abbey grounds. Starting from there, he began a systematic search upwards. Most of it was too far below him to make out anything clearly. The Joseph Bell boomed out the lunch hour. At first Matthias could not be certain. He slitted his eyes and looked hard. A small dark blob was definitely making its way up. He waited with bated breath as it came nearer. It was Jess Squiddle! Clinging to the vane with one paw, Matthias jumped up and down in a frenzy. He waved frantically, shouting at the top of his voice.
Jess! It's me, Matthias! Hurry! Oh, please, hurry!
Jess was trying her best, but from the start she had been handicapped by a big curling bush of a tail. The rude wind swept it about playfully. She could not stop her own tail from dragging and pushing her hither and thither. The champion squirrel climbed gamely onwards. Normally, she would not have attempted the climb under such blowy conditions. She concentrated hard on the ascent. Matthias's voice had not reached her across the vagrant wind, but someone had heard the young mouse's shouts. King Bullsparrow. Having found neither sword nor snake, the king had become peeved and bad-tempered. He issued orders to the search party that they were to stay on the floor of the woods until they found something. Meanwhile, he must go back to the Sparrow Court, where he said there were important matters to attend to. Bullsparrow flew away from the woods, secretly relieved. On reflection, he did not fancy a second meeting with the giant Poison Teeth, whether it was alive, dead, or just pretending, as Poison Teeth often did. Muttering and grumbling to justify himself, the king flew upwards to his court under the roof.
Jess! Up here! Look! I've got the scabbard!
Bullsparrow's mad bright eyes glanced upwards to the weather vane. There was the accursed mouse worm, waving and shouting, with the sword case and belt slung about him. He saw it all now. He had been tricked, duped. Maddened by his own berserk rage, Bull Sparrow flew straight upwards. When he was high above the young mouse, he dropped like a stone right on target. Matthias screamed aloud in agonized terror as the king's beak buried itself into his shoulder. Instinctively, he lashed out with his free paw and struck Bull Sparrow in the eye. The furious claws almost lifted Matthias from the weather vane as the king gripped the belt, trying to drag it off him. Letting go of the vein, Matthias battered at Bull Sparrow's head with both paws. He felt his feet leave the roof as the maddened sparrow heaved away at the belt, causing the scabbard to become disarranged. It flapped down across the young mouse's face. In a fighting fury, Matthias grabbed the scabbard. He used it like a sword, smashing it mercilessly, once, twice, thrice into the Sparrow King's face. The force of the blows from the weighty sword case knocked Bull Sparrow senseless. He toppled from the roof out into space. Matthias screamed in panic. The king's claws were still caught fast in the sword belt. Below, Jess Squiddle clamped a paw across her mouth in horror. She heard the scream and saw Matthias and Bull Sparrow topple from the roof, locked together by the sword belt. They fell outwards into space from the topmost point of the abbey roof.
Chapter 19.
Chicken Hound was having one of his sniggering fits, even attempting to dance a little jig. He had been left to his own devices. The old fool of an abbot and his stupid devoted band of creatures were all outside, shoring up gatehouses, drilling, fetching, carrying, and generally being good and useful. What a crowd of ninnies! With a sack upon his back, the wily fox roamed from room to room. The abbey was his oyster.
This is a nice green glass vase. Why, hello, what a lovely little silver plate. My, my, fancy leaving a beautiful gold chain like you all on your own. There now, I'll just pop you all into my sack. Don't worry, Uncle Chicken Hound will take care of you.
Sniggering delightedly, the fox trotted along the corridor into the next room. More and more small valuables and family keepsakes, belonging to the mice and their woodland guests, vanished into the thief's sack. He sniggered uncontrollably. Imagine all the hard work and fighting that Clooney was going to do, just to get at all this. And here was he, having first choice. He was Chicken Hound, master burglar. He had outlived Sealer, outwitted Clooney, and pulled the wool over the eyes of an abbey full of mice. One day, they would speak his name as the Fox Prince of Thieves. Chicken Hound paused to admire a handsome pair of brass nutcrackers. Oh, yes, very elegant indeed. Into the sack they went. He trotted down the stairs into Cavern Hall. The tables had been laid for afternoon tea. Stuffing and gorging, he moved from place to place, choosing only the tastiest morsels. On his tour of the dining hall, he collected a good quantity of cutlery and some fine antique cruets. Anything that did not suit the young fox's taste was smashed or vandalized. Milk was spilt upon the floor and bread trampled into it. Candles were broken and vegetables squashed across the walls. Chicken Hound shouldered his sack and turned his attention to the kitchen. He booted the door open and walked straight in, slap bang into Friar Hugo. The fat old mouse was bowled completely over. The unexpected fright sent Chicken Hound dashing back through Cavern Hall, with the outraged friar's shouts ringing in his ears.
Stop, thief! Stop the fox!
Chicken Hound bounded up the stairs into Great Hall. Behind him, the friar, having regained his feet, puffed along, raising the hue and cry.
Stop, thief! Come back here, you villain!
With great love and care, Methuselah was putting the final touches to his repair of the tapestry. Only a very sharp-eyed observer would be able to tell that it had once been torn. The warning shouts caused him to stop what he was doing. He turned to see the fox racing towards the door, with Friar Hugo trailing far behind, shouting for all he was worth. Methuselah had but to move a few paces, and he was blocking the doorway. Bravely, he held up a frail paw at the oncoming fox.
You young blackguard! So this is how you repay our kindness? You are far worse than your wicked mother!
Chicken Hound swung the loaded sack with both paws at the old gatehouse keeper's head.
Out of my way, you doddering old fool!
The heavily laden sack struck Methuselah a crushing blow. He collapsed instantly on the floor and lay still. Chickenhound froze momentarily. The sack of loot clattered from his nerveless paws. Friar Hugo halted in his tracks. The fox stared down at the pitiful, crumpled figure. He had not meant to hit him so hard.
Murderer! Oh, you barbarous creature! You've killed Brother Methuselah!
Friar Hugo's cry galvanized the fox into action. He grabbed the sack and fled from the abbey. The fat little friar fell to his knees, tears coursing openly down his plump face. He cradled the sad small bundle that had once been the wisest and oldest mouse of Redwall. Chickenhound sneaked along, keeping close to the abbey. He slunk swiftly across the grounds to one of the small doors in the massive outer wall. The murderer had to get out into the woods before Hugo regained his senses enough to raise the alarm. Wrestling wildly with the stout bars and bolts, he managed somehow to open the small iron door. Without a backward glance, the fox bolted off into the mossflower woodland. As he ran, the Joseph Bell began tolling out the alarm. Chickenhound's confidence grew as he raced through the woods. He sniggered. Daft old fool! Served him right! He should have got out of the way. Hadn't he realized that he was facing Chickenhound, the overlord of all criminals? Pressing deeper into Mossflower, he paused and listened upon the winds for sounds of pursuit. Faintly, he could distinguish certain noises. Whoever it was seemed to be travelling at a breakneck pace, with little regard to obstructing bush or foliage. The sound of snapping branches and undergrowth being trampled grew nearer. The fox's finely attuned sense of smell told him that there were two creatures on his trail. One of them was a hedgehog, but the other... Chickenhound's legs began to tremble. His heartbeats echoed in his ears. There was only one creature in all the wood with that heavy, unmistakable scent. Constance the badger. Instinctively, the terrified fox looked wildly about for a place to hide. Running was out of the question in his present state of panic. It was as if some dark force had heard his silent plea. Not 10 yards from where he stood was the ideal refuge. A hollow in the base of a dead oak. There was a space between two thick roots, partially covered by ferns. Chickenhound slung the sack down the hole and dived in after it. To his surprise, he found it quite large and dry, with a thick carpet of dead grass and leaves. It was dismally dark, but still, it was the best place at a moment's notice. He would be quite invisible and safe from detection. Let them try and find him now. With Ambrose Spike trailing in a wake, Constance crashed through the woods. So great was the badger's anger and grief that she was oblivious to any notion of stalking or tracking. She barged along straight through anything that stood in her way. The heavy striped face, a mask of cold fury. The hedgehog stayed behind Constance. Those huge blunt paws were ready to tear some creature into doll rags. No power on earth would save the murderous fox if Constance caught him. But the badger's retribution was not to be. Quaking with fear, Chickenhound held his breath as the woodland juggernaut thundered by within a couple of yards of the hideout. He listened hopefully as the path of destruction trailed off into the distance of Mossflower. Once more, the woods grew quiet. Chickenhound finally exhaled a long sigh of relief. Once again, the newly self-titled overlord of crime had outsmarted a couple of mere animals. Who on earth did they think they were? When word got around of his daring exploits, other creatures would come to him. Foxes, perhaps. Yes, he could see it all. Chickenhound, at the head of a band of robber foxes, plundering and thieving wherever the whim took him. Of course, he would change his name to a title more fitted to his position. Red Flash, or Night Fang, or maybe Mouse Death. Yes, he liked the sound of that. Mouse Death. His band of minions would admire him, telling each other tales of his astonishing deeds, convinced that the mysterious Mouse Death had always been an infamous thief, unaware of his humble beginnings as Chickenhound, son of old Sealer. As he crouched in the darkness, the young fox decided that the coast was now clear. He could venture out again. Reaching behind, he felt for the sack that contained his first solo haul. Before he left, he wanted to fondle his treasures once more, to reassure himself that they were an auspicious start to his new venture. In the gloomy hideout, his paw reached out and felt something. It was not the sack of loot.
Asmodeus!
That evening, the Joseph Bell rang out a message of sadness and grief to Redwall Abbey. Mice and woodlanders sat about on the stone floor of Great Hall, each creature with its own sorrowful thoughts. Two Redwall mice dead upon the same day. Jess Squiddle sat with her head between her paws. Mr. Squiddle had taken the inconsolable Silent Sam off to bed. Jess had explained fully to the abbot and the council how she had witnessed Matthias's fall from the roof with the sparrow. Instead of falling straight down, both creatures had been swept out of Jess's line of vision by huge gusts of wind. Where Matthias's body lay now, nobody knew. As soon as their feet touched the ground, the Squiddle had gone about organizing search parties. They had scoured the area until the light became too bad to continue, returning after fruitless hours spent searching Redwall grounds and Mossflower Wood. The compassionate Father Abbot consoled the sad Squiddle.
Jess, it's no fault of yours. There was not a thing that you could have done, my friend. The fall was so great that no creature could have survived it. Tomorrow we will search again. Then we must bury my old companion Methuselah. Poor mouse. He never did anything to deserve such a cruel fate.
The abbot pointed to the tapestry, shaking his head.
See, my old gatehouse keeper's last good work. He restored Martin to his place of honour. Methuselah was the gentlest mouse I ever knew. Oh, what a tragic waste of two lives. One who spent his years in search of knowledge, the other cut down before his tree of youth had chance to blossom.
Cornflower spoke up. She was dry-eyed and pale, her paws tightly clenched.
Father Abbot, the loss of Matthias's life was not a waste. It was a tremendous act of bravery and self-sacrifice. He died trying to aid Redwall and all of us in the struggle against the forces of evil, as did his friend Methuselah. I'm sure that this is the way they would wish to be remembered in our hearts, as warriors and heroes.
There was an instant murmur of approval from all present. Overcome by the sad events, the defenders left the hall, some to do guard duty, others to the beds. Constance remained sitting upon the floor, her face expressionless, the mighty paws clenching and unclenching. Brother Alf rose and stretched.
You'd best get some sleep, Constance.
The badger stood up wearily and rubbed her eyes.
No, thank you, brother. I couldn't sleep a wink at a time like this. You know how it is.
Brother Alf sighed deeply. He knew. Having watched Matthias since the first day he arrived at the Abbey Gates, a woodland orphan. Always polite, willing and cheerful. But now...
Come with me, then. I've got work to do. There's all the fishing nets to be laid for the night. Perhaps you'd like to come along and help me.
Glad of the chance to do something, the badger agreed. She and Alf strode off talking of old times.
Do you remember that big grayling that you and Matthias caught?
Brother Alf chuckled.
Do I? Matthias wouldn't be satisfied until that fish was landed on the bank. I was all for giving up, but not him.
Constance nodded admiringly.
Aye, that fish fed the whole abbey. I remember, because I had three helpings. Two less than that spiky waste-bin Ambrose.
Strolling leisurely round the bank of the abbey pond, the two companions gathered up the nets preparatory to spreading them upon the water. Brother Alf went farther along the bank, looking for floats. Constance was about to sit down at the water's edge when she heard Alf calling.
Constance, look! Down here! There's a sparrow!
The badger ran and joined the mouse, looking to where he pointed. Sure enough, half in and half out of the water was the body of King Bull Sparrow. With a great splash, Constance waded into the shallows and dragged the corpse up onto the mossy bank.
It looks as if he's been drowned, brother. Quick, get some help and bring lanterns. Hurry!
The badger thrashed about in the water. Why, oh why, hadn't the search party thought of looking in the abbey pond? Help arrived swiftly.
Out of the way, Constance.
The rest of you, keep those lanterns high.
With hardly a ripple, Winifred and three of her otters slid into the water. As she swam, Winifred issued orders.
Spread out and dive deep. We'll quarter the pond between us. I'll take the south corner.
Tense moments ticked by. A crowd of creatures lined the banks. All that could be seen was the still dark water, broken at intervals as the sleek form of an otter surfaced and dived again. A cry went up as Winifred appeared, towing a still shape. Willing paws dragged the otter's burden up onto the bank. Shaking herself like a dog, Winifred panted.
Look what I found, half sunk in the water over there. Oh, it's a good job the rushes held him up.
Creatures crowded around, all asking the same questions.
Is it Matthias?
Is he dead or alive?
Constance pushed her way through to the limp, sodden figure. The Abbot and Cornflower were close behind her. Abbot Mortimer appealed to the onlookers.
Give us room there. If you really want to help that, then stand back, please. Someone, give Cornflower a lantern. Good mouse, hold it up.
Obediently, the crowd fell back. More lanterns were brought forward. The Abbot worked feverishly, resuscitating, levering and pounding the prone form of Matthias. Cornflower voiced the question that was on the mind of every creature there.
Oh, Father Abbot, is he alive? He doesn't seem to be moving.
The otter clamped a damp paw about her shoulders.
Hush now. The Abbot is doing everything in his power. We will know soon enough.
Brother Alf pushed through, carrying something.
Winifred, one of your otters has just come up with this sword, belt and scabbard. He found them near where Matthias was.
Bring them forward. They may be of some help if Matthias opens his eyes. You never know.
The Abbot beckoned urgently.
Cornflower, give me that lantern, child, quickly.
Holding the lantern glass close to Matthias's nose and mouth, the Abbot was rewarded by the sight of the faint mist that appeared on it.
He lives! Cornflower, Matthias is alive! Bring blankets, get a stretcher, we must get him inside the abbey.
Without a word to anyone, Constance lifted Matthias gently as if he weighed no more than a feather. Carefully, the big badger clasped the young mouse close into the warmth of her rough coat. The crowd formed an aisle either side of her as she strode swiftly to the abbey. Lanterns bobbed about in the darkness like fireflies as the great Joseph Bell tolled out a message of joy and hope to Mossflower.
Chapter 20.
The new day dawned in a haze of soft sunlight. It crept across the countryside suddenly to expand and burst forth over all the peaceful woods and meadowland. Blue-gold tinged with pink, each dewdrop turned into a scintillating jewel. Spiders' webs became glittering filigree. Birds' song rang out as if there had never been a day as fresh and beautiful as this one. The extravaganza of nature's glory was completely lost upon Cluny the Scourge. His one good eye squinted upwards through the smoke of the morning campfires.
It's going to be as hot as the hell's furnace, but at least it won't rain.
Under the impatient eye of the warlord, Cluny's horde gulped down a hasty meal and scurried about picking up weapons. Suitably geared for battle, they quickly fell into ranks. Cluny's personal armourer put the final touches to his chief's war apparel. With the tip of the standard, Cluny signalled his captains, Darkclaw, Frogblood, Fangburn, Cheeseteeth, Scumnose and Mangefur, scrambled into their positions. As yet, Cluny had not chosen a new second-in-command, though he had let it be known that any of his followers who distinguished himself in the coming battle would receive immediate promotion in the field. Kilconey the Ferret stood alongside his chief with a drum that he had made from an old water butt. He had unofficially appointed himself drummer-cum-soothsayer. The Ferret watched Cluny intently. The chief was going to speak. He banged the drum, calling the horde to silence. Cluny lifted the visor of his war helmet and stared out across the waiting horde.
This time there will be no mistakes, and there will be no retreat. We stay, even if it means putting Red Wall to siege. We stand firm. Anyone who takes one backward step is dead. Anyone who disobeys orders is dead. Anyone who does not fight tooth and claw with all his might is also dead. That is my promise, and Cluny always keeps his word. Hear me. All we face is a lot of peaceful mice and some local woodland creatures. Defeat them and I will give you rewards you never dreamed of. The enemy are not trained fighters like we are, not natural killers. There is not one among them who can lead as I lead you.
At the center of the front rank stood a rat who had been wounded in the first encounter at the abbey. He whispered out the corner of his mouth to his comrade in arms alongside him.
Lead his small foot. Last time we attacked, he stood well out the way, begging some meadow.
The sharp ears of Cluny had caught what the unfortunate soldier had said. The warlord leaped down from his rostrum and seized the trembling miscreant, booting him forward into plain view of the army.
See this traitor! Here is a rat who doesn't think I lead my horde! Cluny the Scourge sees and hears all! Watch now, and let this be a lesson to anyone that dares doubt me!
The wretched rat soldier lay shaking on the churchyard path. A hush fell across the entire horde. He stared beseechingly into the merciless eye of Cluny.
Oh, please, Chief, it was only a joke. Oh, I didn't mean to...
Crack! The powerful tail whipped expertly out, slashing across the rat's face with its poisoned metal war barb. The army looked on in horror as the stricken victim shuddered and lay dead at Cluny's feet. Ignoring the slain soldier, Cluny the Scourge pushed his way roughly through the horde until he reached the cemetery gates. It was going to be a long march to Redwall. Burdened as they were with the battering ram and all the paraphernalia of destruction, they would have to camp overnight by the roadside, and the great attack upon Redwall would take place early the next day. There was to be no secrecy. For maximum effect, the army must be seen marching boldly up to the very gates of the abbey in full array. Cluny shook his standard as the ferret's drum thundered out. He roared madly,
"All to Redwall! Smash the gates! Kill! Kill!"
The shimmering heat waves from the road reverberated to the shouts of the horde.
"Cluny! Cluny! Kill! Kill! Kill!"
Chapter 21.
In his fevered dreams, the young mouse wandered through dark caverns. Somewhere, a voice was calling out to him.
"Matthias! Matthias!"
It sounded vaguely familiar, but he had other things to do than identify the voice. He must find the sword. In the Stygian gloom, he saw the late rose. It was bathed in a pale blue light. What was it doing here in this dark netherworld? Matthias saw that all the tiny thorns on the rose stems resembled small swords. He felt he should speak to the rose.
"Please tell me, late rose, where will I find the sword?"
The topmost rose quivered. He watched it blossom before his eyes. At the center of the blooming petals was the face of Methuselah.
"Matthias, my friend, I can help you no more. Seek out the aid of Martin."